It was a dark and stormy night, but how dark and how stormy depends on the place. In mystery, and especially in hard-boiled noir, the city is a character. If you want to hide the body in Chicago, you can head for the lake. But in Baltimore, you better know of an empty row house basement. And while Manhattan's femme fatales may be clicking along a dark alley in sky-high heels, the lady sneaking around St. Paul, Minnesota, might just be wearing snow boots. A new series of noir-themed anthologies features mystery writers stalking the hidden neighborhoods of their cities. We'll talk to some of those writers about why they choose to imagine crimes in the cities they love. From killings on the carousels of Coney Island to poison mojitos in Miami, what's your city hiding? Tell us the mysteries you're reading and what you don't dare put down. Our number here in Washington, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is talk@npr.org. Later this hour, we'll look into the latest religious controversy. This one involves history textbooks and Hinduism. But first, my guest is Eddie Muller. He's written a series of crime novels set in San Francisco, as well as three acclaimed nonfiction books about film noir. His story, Kid's Last Fight, appears in the anthology San Francisco Noir. He joins us from member station KQED in San Francisco. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Lynn. Thanks for having me.
So what got you hooked on noir?
Well, truthfully, my city got me hooked on noir. My father was a sports writer in San Francisco. He worked for Hearst's Examiner for a long time, ever since he was a kid. And I really think that my interest in noir stems from my desire to sort of understand the city that my father grew up in and what it was like in his prime. And so I've sort of traced my whole interest in film noir and Roman noir back to that. So it really does have something to do with the city.
Are you interested in the San Francisco of the past or of the present in terms of noir?
Well, both. I mean, really, my interest in noir in general is in the continuum, if you will, how what we originally thought of as noir and whether that stemmed from hard-boiled crime fiction or even earlier than that, up through what Hollywood did with it in the 1940s and how that manifests itself today and how each generation seems to influence the next.
What sets noir fiction apart from other kinds of mysteries or other kinds of crime novels, for instance?
Well, it's a willingness to explore the darkest side of human nature, I think. these days, I've taken to explaining to people that if you look at something like, just as an example, let's say the whole O.J. Simpson thing is a true crime thing. If you wanted to fictionalize that and you wrote it from the authorities' perspective, that would be just a crime story. If you actually wrote it from O.J.'s perspective, that would be a noir. Whether you found him to be guilty or innocent, that would be a noir because he would be a man trapped by circumstance accused of a crime he didn't commit, or it would be a tale told from the perspective of the killer.
Huh. So how does the city play such an important role in noir? Why does the city play such an important part?
Well, because noir, as we think of it, is really an urban phenomena. I mean, when you think of it, you don't think of cozy mysteries set in the countryside. It really does have something to do with people being desperate, and I think an urban environment, generally, there's too many rats in the cage, and how does that affect people and make them want to commit a crime? Because basically, that's in noir, a crime is committed. Somebody goes too far, steps over that moral line, and they will commit a crime. That is a given in what we think of as noir, whether it's film or fiction. Let me
go back to what you were the example you were giving before about the O.J. Simpson trial, the O.J. Simpson situation. Because I always think of noir also as being something that involves a detective in some way, that it's a detective story. Am I wrong about that?
Not necessarily. There are a lot of noir stories that are detective fiction. I've said in the past that the example that I always give is if somebody walks in to hire the detective in his shabby office, and he takes the job and he investigates this, the husband hires him to see if his wife is cheating on him, and then he does that and he uncovers all kinds of family secrets, and then he sort of sets that story right, solves the case, then goes back to his lonely office. That's detective fiction. If the detective is hired to investigate whether the wife's cheating, the wife seduces the detective, she talks the detective into killing her husband, he does it, that's noir.
Well, let's talk about your city, San Francisco, because we're talking about a series of books that are coming out based in different cities, noir stories based in different cities. Yours is San Francisco, mm-hmm. which, of course, has quite a noir heritage. But what really makes it such a good city, such a good setting for those kinds of stories?
Well, geographically, it's 7 miles by 7 miles, and it's there's a certain sense of, as much as people love the geography, there is a certain sense of entrapment in San Francisco because you're surrounded by water on three of the four sides. But what's one thing that distinguishes San Francisco from some of the other cities that you might see in this collection or this series is San Francisco is a place that you don't escape from. It's a place you escape to. And I think that has a big bearing on the kind of stories that are told here. If you've committed a crime someplace else and you're on the run, you might run to San Francisco. And the other thing that's interesting about it, particularly from a contemporary standpoint, is there in noir, there's a real one of the themes is identity and people trying to escape from who they are and assume a new identity. And that's generally why a lot of people come to San Francisco, is to live the life that they really want to live and to get away from the past life. And if that past follows you, well, that's a very noir thing.
All right. Well, if Eddie Muller is the czar of noir in San Francisco, Laura Lippman is the doyen of crime in Baltimore. Winner of the Edgar, Seamus, and Agatha Awards, she is the author of the Tess Monahan crime series and two standalone novels as well. She edited the forthcoming Baltimore Noir series. Her story, Easy as 1-2-3, leads the collection. And Laura Lippman joins us now from member station WYPR in Baltimore. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So what's the relationship between your writing and your city, Baltimore?
I grew up in Baltimore. I was the daughter of a newspaper man here and wanted very much to come back here to work, but it took a long time. I had to spend about 8 years in Texas before I could convince my hometown newspaper to hire me. And coming back as an adult, I saw this real difference between the city I had romanticized and even fetishized in my mind. I tell people that Baltimore is a little bit like this eccentric uncle you had who as a child you adored and looked up to. But as an adult, you begin to see some things that aren't quite as affectionate and you find out secrets and backstories that make it more challenging to love it and yet you love it still.
And Baltimore recently has been the setting for a number of programs and films about crime. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think part of the reason that is because a young Baltimore Sun reporter named David Simon wrote a book called Homicide back in the 1980s and indirectly set himself on that career path. I mean, it's been very natural for him to follow that up with other books and then a miniseries and now the television show The Wire. And so part of that's just luck and coincidence, you know, just something that happened. I guess in interest of full disclosure, I should add that that's the person I happen to share my life with, but that's also just luck and coincidence. We don't really sit around at night plotting homicides or thinking of dastardly crimes to commit in fiction. The more real answer, and it's one that disturbs politicians when we talk about it, is that Baltimore has a murder problem that won't go away. Other major cities have enjoyed really significant declines in their murder rates since they peaked, most in the crack cocaine epidemic of the 80s and early 90s. Baltimore continues year in and year out to be in the top five per capita. The past week in Baltimore is notable for being the first in 2006 without a homicide.
It's interesting, too. Eddie Muller mentioned earlier that his father was a journalist. Your father was a journalist, and you yourself started out as a journalist. Do journalists just automatically get interested in writing noir stories? Or what's the connection between journalism and noir, Laura?
I think part of it is that journalism is such a wonderful entree into the lives of all sorts of people from all parts of society that you would never meet. You find yourself going, I covered poverty and social services for a long time, and after growing up here for the first time, I was going inside these row houses on McCullough Street that I had just driven past as a little girl. I was discovering how people lived. At the same time, I was going into the mansions of Guilford and seeing how those people lived. So I think part of it is just how much more information you have because you've been able to travel through the city so widely.
So in terms of your city, what's the best setting for noir? Is it the mansions of Guilford or the row houses?
I think it's the row houses. I think I loved the fact that Eddie noted that San Francisco has this claustrophobic fact to it, that it's surrounded by water. Baltimore has a political, it's not unique, but it's very unusual. Baltimore City lies in no county, so it can't annex, it can't expand. And in these old row house neighborhoods that are where the houses are so close together and people really do live cheek by jowl, and that's getting ever more interesting now as you have, and I guess I'm one of them, I can't stand apart from it, you have this really yuppie influx into some very old working class neighborhoods. I was very amused in my neighborhood when the locals, the people who'd lived there a long time, protested the coming of a wine bar and said, we don't want those kind of people in the neighborhood. They preferred a more normal tavern.
And a wine bar is not a particularly good setting for a noir mystery either, I think.
No, it's really not.
A good old Baltimore bar, I think, fits much better into the noir the noir genre. Well, we are wandering the city this hour looking for trouble, and it's all about noir, as you have been hearing. We're going to continue our discussion in a moment, and you can join us by sending us an email at talk@npr.org or by calling us at 800-989-8255. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neil Conan. We're talking about crime fiction this hour. If you know where the bodies are buried in your city, give us a call and tell us what you're reading. You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. My guests are Eddie Muller, crime writer and noir expert who appears in San Francisco Noir, and Laura Lippman, doyen of Baltimore crime writing. She edited and appears in Baltimore Noir. Eddie Muller, before we just went on that break, Laura Lippman was saying that telling us the best neighborhood for setting a crime novel in Baltimore. What about San Francisco? What's the neighborhood you think of as the place to go to set a mystery novel, a dark mystery?
Well, first off, I love the fact that I'm the czar and Laura's the doyenne. That's very nice. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Eddie.
Well, actually, it was funny. When you were asking that question, it occurred to me that one of the great pleasures of crime fiction is that the protagonist always moves between these various social strata, which to me is always the most exciting thing about it. I don't actually choose one or the other. I have to say, if there's one thing about the San Francisco Noir collection that I was slightly disappointed by, and I hope Peter Maravellis, the editor, is not listening at this moment, it's that there wasn't enough upscale crime. There was really no Pacific Heights crime committed in that anthology, which somewhat disappointed me. When I write my books, I really one of the great things that I take pleasure in is going from like I say, the outhouse to the penthouse is, I think, what really makes it interesting. When you examine how a city is structured and how it works, to be able to move between all that is fascinating to me.
All right, let's see if we can get a listener in on this discussion. Kate in Portland, Oregon. Hi, Kate. Go ahead.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi.
The books that I'd like to talk about are not actually set in the city, but they've got a real sense of place to them. They are by Julia Spencer Fleming, and they take place in the fictional Miller's Kill, New York, upstate. The protagonist is the Reverend Claire Ferguson. She's an Episcopal priest who's an ex-Army helicopter pilot. And the cold of the winters and the icy, brooding presence of the mountains just suffuses these books. And it has such a sense of presence and really contributes to the very dark happenings of this one small town.
Are you a big mystery fan?
I like some mysteries. They have to have a really good story and be well written.
And what about the kind of noir fiction we've been talking about, the ones that are set in the big city? Do you read any of those?
I do, and I actually think that these books do qualify, because oftentimes the author will give you the perspective of the victim or the murderer, and so you kind of get both sides, from the law hunters to the lawbreakers' perspective.
All right. Well, thanks for calling, Kate.
Sure thing.
That goes a little bit against something you said earlier, Eddie, which is that to be noir, it has to be set in a city.
Well, you know, that's just a generalization. But boy, does Karen know how to rub salt in a wound. when I was nominated for all those awards that Julia won.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We've been focusing, Laura Lippman, with you on Baltimore, but talking about setting, your stories appear in three of these noir books in this series we're talking about, in Baltimore, in D.C., and in Dublin, which I found very interesting because I don't somehow think of Dublin as a noir city particularly.
The Dublin story, I was recruited by the editor, Ken Bruin. It should be noted that the crime writing world is extremely cozy. I know Eddie. We've met many times. He's done me many favors. And you know, I know a lot of the people who are editing the noir series, and I was invited to write about Dublin, about which I knew only what a tourist would know. Hmm. And Ken said, well, you can then write from that perspective. D.C., which was edited by George Pelicanos, was easier for me. I have friends and relatives in the area. My family actually lived outside D.C. when I was very young. So that one I thought I could pull off at least. And that one I did set in a very upscale neighborhood in Northwest Washington. So yes, I'm a bit of the noir slut. I'll actually appear in a fourth volume later.
All right, we're changing that doyen title now. But I won't. Anyway, but which was easy? Was Baltimore the easiest because that's the city you really know and the one you grew up in, or the
Baltimore in some ways was the easiest. Certainly, I knew the neighborhood best. I set it in a neighborhood not far from where I live. But it was the only one of the stories that was written from a man's perspective. So that made it rather challenging. It's a story about a contractor, and it was inspired by something that happens because of all the renovations and changes that are going on in the neighborhood. There is a tendency, if you hire a bad contractor, and the contractor in my story is a very good one, and they're trying to raise your house in order to give you a full basement, every now and then they screw it up and the house just collapses.
Uh-huh.
And I've seen this happen twice in my neighborhood in the past year, where this house that someone just spent, you know, a couple $100,000 for to obtain the shell of the house just ends up a pile of rubble on the lot because they hired someone to excavate the basement who didn't know how to do it. I sort of liked that idea. I just sort of had the line running around in my head, you know, another house collapsed last week.
Uh-huh. Okay. Let's take a call from James. He's calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, James.
Oh, hi. Great discussion. Enjoying it very much.
Okay.
I had a question about the setting. You've talking about San Francisco, Baltimore, and they're pretty famous. You know, there's a stereotype of Baltimore, maybe one of San Francisco, but in a new city like Charlotte where there's not so much history, could you envision a noir novel set in a city like Charlotte? Do you think you could pull it off? And I'll take some comments off the air.
Okay, thanks so much for calling, James. Does the city have to be old? Does it have to be steeped in history to be a city?
Oh, I don't think so at all.
No, I think the New South is a great setting.
Yeah.
Why do you think it is a great setting, Laura?
Again, I mean, you know, Eddie defines noir better than anyone I know. I should say, whenever anyone asks me what noir is, I always say, go ask Eddie Muller. But I think one of the things that is common is it's a story about dreamers who end up being cheaters or schemers, people who may start with a fairly honorable desire. They want to earn more money. They want to get the girl or the guy. And then the way in which they end up doing it turns out to be not the most legal way or the best way or the moral way. And I think cities like Atlanta and Charlotte and Dallas are full of stories like that.
Eddie?
I totally agree. One of the things I said at the top was about this continuum that I'm fascinated by. And I think that in some ways, noir fiction, the way it's written by some people like Laura and like George Pelicanos, is a social history of a place. And I do think that, like in San Francisco, you can certainly see very noir stories about San Francisco during the Gold Rush era. And what was that like during the Barbary Coast? And what was it like when San Francisco had this huge influx of people during the war effort and the shipyards sprang up here? And what was it like during the Summer of Love in the 1960s? And what's it like today? I do not think that it has anything really to do with a particular time and place. I think it has to do with human nature and a city that is just in the early stages of its development, I find very ripe for noir. And I think Laura's definition of dreamers turning into schemers is spot on. It's brilliant.
Well, let's get another writer into the mix and another city into the mix. William Kent Krueger writes a Minnesota crime series, and his story Bums appears in the forthcoming Twin Cities noir. His book Blood Hollow won the Anthony Award, and he joins us from Minnesota Public Radio in the dark, dark city of St. Paul, Minnesota. Welcome to the program, William.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Lynn.
And it's not a city I think of as a dark city. It's a city I think of as a very light city, actually. So,
Minnesota nice.
That's right. We've all heard of Guy Noir, of course, from Garrison Keillor. But
oh, sure.
How does St. Paul work as a setting for a noir mystery?
Well, it was interesting, the comment that the caller just made about Charlotte. Could that possibly be a setting for noir? And I'm sure people who think about the Twin Cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, think a noir anthology about those places? Give me a break. In fact, I think all of the authors have done a terrific job in bringing out the dark underbelly of the Twin Cities. It's been just an enjoyable project, actually trying to create the noir sense in a place like St. Paul.
Now, in the collection, your story is set in St. Paul, but your crime series is mostly outside of the city. So did you have to write differently when you're writing for a crime story in the city and in that sort of noir feeling as opposed to when you're writing for a mystery that goes on outside the city?
Yeah, actually, it was the noir part that I found the most challenging because noir... Hi, Eddie. Hi, Laura.
Hi, Ken. How are you?
It is a small community. I think that for me, noir really is more about atmosphere and tone and style than it is about place. And you can create a noir story in Kansas just as easily as San Francisco or L.A., although those are the places we typically think of as noir. So for me to create the story in St. Paul was really, okay, how do I adopt this noir style to the story that I want to tell here? And it was just a hoot. I had a lot of fun with it.
All right, let's see if we can get a call now from Frank, and he is calling from San Francisco. Hi, Frank.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
I don't know your money.
I wanted to say the difference. Sorry? No. I always wanted to say the difference between San Francisco and Boston is we know we're crazy, you know. Anyway, I was looking for more books by George V. Higgins, who wrote about Boston's underworld and, you know, the vast gap between the social strata there, which San Francisco doesn't have. And I noticed in Boston they have, like, a society column for gangsters, you know. Well, we have the society column for society, you know, and I thought that was interesting. They have this.
And sometimes you can't tell the difference.
So that's, I just thought there was an interesting comparison between Boston and San Francisco, and I thought maybe, you know, you had some thoughts on that.
Well, they are like sister cities. I've always felt that. And, yeah, I love George V. Higgins, and The Friends of Eddie Coyle is one of the great crime books of the 70s. And there are some other ones out there, but...
Yeah, I was looking for his books, and then I asked somebody, why isn't he writing anymore? Well, he's dead.
Well,
he died a couple years ago. He was writing, though,
it's
well
kind of
into
a noir answer, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks so much for your call, Frank.
Thank you.
That's right. That's a career ender.
I wonder if each of you could talk a little bit about, most cities have, their Empire State Building, they all have their own landmarks. Do landmarks from your different cities play a role in any of your stories or in any of these stories? Let's start with you first, Bill Krueger.
You know, the landmark for the Twin Cities is the Mall of America. I can think of lots of disaster movies that would be perfect for that setting. I don't think it's appropriate for noir, however.
Okay. All right, then. Moving on to Eddie Muller.
Well, I think that some of us who contributed to the San Francisco anthology were almost adamant about avoiding certain landmarks, because you feel like you're pandering to the postcard crowd if you put, the Golden Gate Bridge or Coit Tower or cable cars in your story. And it's funny, in my novels, I sometimes just amuse myself by figuring out how to use the expected thing in a different way. I mean, I'll obsessively focus on the Bay Bridge instead of the Golden Gate Bridge. And if there's a scene set on a cable car, it'll somehow play totally against the tourist expectations or something. So, yeah, I mean, there are those things in San Francisco. And yeah, I'm from here. I mean, I'm a native San Franciscan. And so I take all that landmark stuff with a grain of salt. I mean, it's all the same background to me.
Laura, before I go to you, I just want to remind our listeners that you are listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Laura, is there a landmark in your stories?
There are two kinds of landmarks in Baltimore. My former Baltimore Sun colleague, Linnell Smith, who happens to be the granddaughter of Ogden Nash, once observed that Baltimore is a city where you give directions according to what's not there anymore. And if you're an old Baltimorean, you say, oh, remember where Hutzler's was on Howard Street? So you go there and you make a right. But Baltimore has wonderfully quirky landmarks. I've used the Domino Sugars sign quite a bit in my fiction. It really does seem to follow you wherever you go in the city. It's quite visible from a number of angles. And it also has the just utterly delightful Bromo Seltzer Tower, which still turns blue at night but no longer has the Bromo Seltzer bottle on top of it, much to my disappointment.
All right, let's see if we can get another call in here now. We've got Hawk in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Hawk.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I just thought I was curious about you, the comment from your panelists about Richard K. Morgan's Altered Carbon. It takes place, I think, about 600 years in the future in what's called Bay City, but it's San Francisco, and there's an old rusted Golden Gate Bridge, and there's a trilogy, and the first is definitely crime noir, and I'm just curious what they thought of it, because it didn't seem to be very big in the U.S.
I know nothing about it, so
thanks
for tipping me.
I missed that one. I really feel badly about that.
Well, right. It sounds like something we should know about now, though.
Yeah.
It's worth checking out. It's sci-fi, and it's pretty gritty and gruesome, but there are two other books that follow the same character that are slightly different plots. But
what's the author's name?
Richard K. Morgan. He's online.
All right. Thanks for your call, Hawk.
Thanks a lot.
Great name.
Look for Cleveland Noir coming soon.
All right, let's see if we can get one more call in here. We've got Valentine now in Hartford, Connecticut. Valentine, go ahead.
Hello. I'd like to thank everybody for the education I'm getting in film in noir fiction. I love mysteries with a sense of place, but I'm never sure if they're noir or not. I've just discovered a new author who writes about Edinburgh called Ian Rankin.
Yeah, he's doing pretty well. He's only responsible for... The figure is that 10% of the books sold in the UK are written by Ian Rankin, something like that. It's really pretty astonishing.
And he keeps at it. He could amount to something.
I think that it's so improbable that it would be a great setting for noir because it's so bland and respectable that, Hitchcock said he would set a crime by a country stream in the sunshine. So.
Really? You think Edinburgh is respectable?
No. I've gone to the Mall of America now.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm disagreeing with what you said about that. Well, I called about San Francisco, I'm afraid. I'm just yet another one. And I wanted to say that an author I love is Marcia Muller.
No relation to me.
Has such a feel. What I love about San Francisco more than anything, though I don't live in there anymore, is the many neighborhoods and how each one has a different personality. Mm-hmm. And she is able to take her characters to this one and that one, and moving between them, I agree, is not setting everything in one setting, but the contrast of people who go from this to that. But she creates...
Valentine, I'm going to have to interrupt you, and I'll let our guests, talk to you when we return.
Okay.
We'll continue this discussion, but William Kent Krueger, we're going to say goodbye now. Thanks so much for joining us from Minnesota.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about urban crime fiction. My guests are Eddie Muller, crime writer and noir expert who appears in San Francisco Noir, and Laura Lippman, author of 10 crime novels and the Tess Monahan crime series. She's the editor of the Baltimore Noir Collection. And thanks for staying with us. And I wanted to read an email to both of you, because the last caller we had was extolling the virtues of San Francisco, but here's one about a city that's also a great noir city, and that's Miami. It's from Amanda, who now lives in Gainesville. Not only is Miami my hometown, but it's so magical and mysterious, with wonderful spots for crimes like Little Havana, Coconut Grove, or even upscale Doral and Coral Gables. Such a great mix of different cultures and classes that can bring in all types of characters into a suspenseful noir. And Eddie and Laura, I think Miami has been the setting for many great crime novels, has it not, Eddie?
Absolutely. I think that Florida as a state is definitely taking over from California as the leading producer of noir fiction. Absolutely. And noir reality, too, perhaps.
Why do you think that is?
What is it
about
know. I don't know. I mean, I've only visited Florida. I mean, it's in many ways, it's the same thing as California. There's a strange, the bedrock of it is an unusual geography, but there's a strange transient nature to the people who go there. There's this weird vacation community that happens all over the place, which, of course, when people are transient, there is crime. I mean, that just, it's like a ants on overripe fruit or something. I mean, that's just the way humans behave. So I think that's part of it. Laura may know more about it than me.
I don't know more about Florida. I will say that I think Miami Purity by Vicki Hendricks is one of the great novels written in the last 50 years, written by, it's almost an inverse of The Postman Always Rings Twice, in which it's the woman who's more of the predator, and it takes place in a dry cleaner's. I cannot begin to say enough great things about this book.
Yeah,
it is one of the most vicious, hilarious books. And it's really hard for a lot of women to pull off noir. I hate to make that kind of generalization, but you don't see many books like Vicki's.
All right, let's take a call from Les in Boise, Idaho. Hi, Les.
Hi. This might be a kind of an amateur question about like noir and film, but I just wanted to get the panelists' take on films like Heat and Collateral and to some extent Ronin, just about cities being a silent character in movies like that. And I'll take my comments off the air.
All right, Eddie, you've written about film noir. So what's the relationship between the books and the movies?
Well, I don't think that's an amateur's question at all. I think it speaks to exactly what I was saying all along. I do think that, Heat is a story that is in the great tradition of caper. It's The Asphalt Jungle or The Killing, Stanley Kubrick's movie The Killing. I mean, up through, you see it in African-American cinema, like the movie Dead Presidents or something like that, because noir has to do with, like Laura was saying earlier, dreamers who become schemers. The big score is the American dream, and if you can't get it legally, you're going to get it illegally. And I think that's what you see in a lot of that stuff. And that happens in big cities because the scores are bigger.
Okay, let's take another call from Kevin. And he's calling from Grand Rapids, Michigan. Hi, Kevin.
Hi there. Something that I'm always fascinated by with noir, more so in film maybe than in fiction, is the way that people talk, the dialogue. It's real snappy. It's real witty. And it's not really the way that people talk in real life. I'd just like to hear... the comments of the of the commentators there on what it's like to write that dialogue. And then also, as an aside, are there any good Detroit stories? I would think Detroit would make a great setting for noir.
Elmore Leonard.
I think.
Go ahead, Laura.
I was going to say, I think there might be a Detroit noir in the works, but if we're going to talk about Detroit noir, we have to mention Lauren Estelman, who gets credit for asking to define noir, is known to have said, well, it's very simple. It's French for black.
All right. Well, Detroit's a prominent city in the genre then. How about the dialogue?
Well, you know, it's funny. I think that probably more writers of crime fiction have been influenced by Raymond Chandler than anybody else, and I think that that was probably one of Chandler's greatest strengths as a stylist was his dialogue. I think that the stuff you're talking about is really what you find in the films of the 1940s, that really snappy repartee. I don't really think you see it in that much crime fiction today, and part of the reason is because in the 50s, I mean, Hollywood leads the way in determining a lot of these things, and in the 50s, of course, the post-classic film noir era, there was a real change toward naturalism in writing and acting, and I think that people don't accept that kind of banter for the very reasons you pointed out. It is not real. It's a super stylized thing. And I think that if you actually saw that in a movie today, a contemporary film, it would be rejected. The audience would reject it, much the way when Curtis Hanson made L.A. Confidential, he consciously did not have the characters wear fedoras, which would have been technically correct for the period, but he said an audience today will reject that. They'll think it's a dress-up movie from the 1940s and they'll laugh at it. They won't take it seriously. So there are things that we love about the classic noir that you have to stay away from if you want people to accept it today.
All right.
When it comes to dialogue, I think that one of our greatest writers in novels and in film is Richard Price. And what's interesting is to compare the dialogue he writes for film to the dialogue he writes for novels. It's very different. There's a different artifice in both. But in film, you can never get away with sort of these long, gorgeous monologues that Price writes in his novels. It wouldn't work in terms of rhythm and tone. But both are not the way people talk. You wouldn't want to read a book in which people spoke as they really did. There would be far too many ums and ahs and sort of vaguely, you know, sort of sentences just as meander on. And it's just that the artificiality has changed, so it seems real.
All right, Laura Lippman and Eddie Miller, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, it was our pleasure. My pleasure, at
Thanks
least.
For having me.
Eddie Muller is the author of three acclaimed books on film noir, and his story, Kid's Last Fight, appears in San Francisco Noir. And Laura Lippman is author of 10 crime novels and the Tess Monahan crime series, and she is the editor of the Baltimore Noir Collection.